5 and 101.9 AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
And good morning, Rutherford County. We have an extraordinary show on today. We have Mr. Hudley Crockett, who is a legend in the media and everything else that you can think of. He goes back even to, hard to believe, even my childhood, Hudley. I can't believe it.
Almost to Methuselah.
Yeah, or maybe even beyond that. But you have been one of my heroes and entertainers and information directors and everything else is almost as long as I can remember. And we go back to when radio was king, when you first started. And it's hard for me to believe that you were a Rutherford County. You were born right here, right?
Born in Crescent.
In Crescent.
Which is a suburb of Barfield.
Yes. And then, for some reason, as you got older in your early teens and everything else, you were in school in Nashville. You went to West.
Well, my mother and father moved when I was a year old. We moved to Nashville. And so I grew up. I was born right here in Rutherford County. And we moved to Nashville, and so I grew up in Nashville. But even then, on weekends, we came back because all of my mother's family family tree was here in Rutherford County, as was my father's. So we were back and forth in Rutherford County, and particularly in Barfield and in the Rock Springs area and Crescent and so forth, all my life.
You were bit by the bug to be in the media for some reason, and you're telling me it started real early in your life.
I was in Knox School, which was a public 1-4 school in Nashville, and I was in the fourth grade, and WSM had a program that they put on once a week. It was 15 minutes in the afternoon after school, and it was a quiz show, and they had three contestants, mm-hmm. one from each of three different grammar schools, all fourth graders, mm-hmm. and you competed, and if you made a perfect score, you received a $5 bill. That's my first talent fee I started to work on. Anyway, so they asked, and Ott Devine was, I remember Ott yeah. Devine was mm-hmm. a famous radio announcer. He was the host of the show. So I'll tell you this as quickly as I can. So we had three questions apiece. It went around the room, and we were mm-hmm. sitting around microphones, and of course, a little bit nervous and so forth. And all three of us got our first questions. They didn't ask you the same questions. And so we were tied. So we went through the second round, and we all three got the questions. Went through the third and final round. My two contestants, opponents, easily won their questions, and Ott Devine said, "Now, here is your question. Repeat the golden rule." Well, of course, I knew the golden rule. I'd been going to Sunday school since I could talk or anything else. And I just said, "Do unto others." And I went blank. It was just blank. And I said, "Do unto others as you would be done by them." True story. And Ott said, "Well, that has the meaning. We're going to give you credit for that." So that was my first shot at radio. And as you said, I got a bug, and I grew up wanting to be in radio, and spent so many hours with my mother and father at night after supper time, sitting by their chairs, between their chairs, and listening to all kinds of shows. My mother would have the soap operas on in the daytime, Ma Perkins and Stella Dallas and so forth.
Goodness gracious, I remember those.
So I grew up with radio, yes.
You, we most of us in Tennessee remember you for a number of things. Sports director for Channel 2, WSIX,
right,
for a number of years. And you're involved in broadcasting ball games and all those other things. And we also remember you for the political part of your life,
right,
when you're going through that. But how in the world did you get started? Because that's so fascinating to me. I think of you just going straight into radio and television here in the Middle Tennessee area, but you had a lot going on well before then.
Well, I grew up in Nashville, as I said, and went to West End High School, and I was fortunate enough to play basketball, football, and baseball, and
for West, right?
For West, and Larry Munson came to WKDA when it was built in 1946, as was as same time as Cecil Elrod was building this station in Murfreesboro. And I got to know Larry because he broadcast so many of our ball games, and I told him I was interested in being a sportscaster, and he gave me some good advice and so forth, and we remained close even after he went to Atlanta. But in the process of that, I won a sports, primarily basketball and baseball scholarship to Austin Peay. And I went to Austin Peay mainly not for that reason, but because they were starting a radio school. Well, something they called a radio school. As it turned out, it wasn't much of a radio school. It consisted of a table and a microphone and a Magna Corder. You'll know what I'm talking about. That was the old commercial recorder that all the radio stations used. And they had a young girl. She was very nice. I say girl, she was a young lady. But she had just graduated from UT. So she was probably about 3 years older than her students, if best. And she had no radio experience, and so that wasn't working very well. I was an English major all the way through high school and into college and so forth. My English professor, after we wrote our initial papers for the opening class, so that the professor could judge your ability for sentence structure and spelling and, you know, just the basic things, and asked me to stay after class the following day after she had graded the papers, and she said, "You went to West End High School, didn't you?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "And you had," and she named three teachers I had, Ms. Martin and Ms. Alder and Ms. Dembski. And she said, "You've had a lot of training, and I want you to spend the next couple of weeks I want you to come in and pick up the papers and help me grade papers."
Wow.
So that was a compliment, but it wasn't much of a challenge. And so I began to have some second doubts. I stayed there and did well for a time. And then I went to Tennessee to the Tennessee School of Broadcasting. And then I broke in. My first radio job was in Rocky Mount and North Carolina. And from there went to Texas and New Mexico, El Paso and Carlsbad, and that's where I got my first play-by-play job. And then from there came back to Alabama, and we were in Alabama for 3.5 years, 53 through 56, and I was fortunate enough to be selected by Associated Press as the Sportscaster of the Year in, I believe it was 1955. And that opened up some additional doors, and I started getting contacts. And then Larry Munson was still at WSIX at that point, and Channel 2, and he left to go up the street to WSM to do the Vanderbilt sports. And that left the job there open, and they got in touch with me. They already had my tapes on file and so forth, and got in touch with me, and I sent them an updated tape on the bus overnight, and they called me the next day and said, "Come to Nashville, and we need to negotiate." And we did, and that's how I broke into the Nashville market. And the job included doing the replays of the University of Tennessee football games, taking the film copy and recreating the game in the following started out on Tuesday night, and then it got to be on Monday night, and then it got to be on Sunday night as they improved the speed of the processing of the film and so forth. And
that wasn't been done.
No, it had never been done that way. I was, as a lot of people know, I'm sort of an individualist, and I like to do things my way.
And you love to create.
I hope so. Yes, and I just felt like we could do it and make it more like a real ball game, so that people mm-hmm. sitting at home could feel they were almost in the stadium.
I remember
with sound effects and. And I actually call the plays off the film instead mm-hmm. of sitting there and just talking about the weather while somebody's running for a 40-yard touchdown. Mm-hmm. I actually called it off the
first time I'd ever seen that done.
And we did the first one, and it just had a tremendous response. UT people and Vanderbilt people and other people, because it was good football programming back in those days. You didn't have all of the facility, had no videotape, mm-hmm. had no color. Television was
George
still
Mooney
black
and white. Was calling back then for UT.
Mooney was calling UT, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he and I got to be really good friends. In fact, when I ran for office, he was on my campaign committee in Knox County. So anyway, that's how we got started, and then the opportunity came along where I was approached about switching from sports to go into news, which a lot of people have done that. A lot of your...
Was that something you wanted to do?
No, I had not thought about it at that time. Well, I had thought about it because I always was interested in news and government and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it was an opportunity that came up, and I said, well, I'll do it but I have to do it my way, and we'll build a... I've got to hire a certain cameraman and so forth, so we started out in the news business, and Channel 2, which was Channel 8 then, mm-hmm. but they had never had a news department, and so we started from scratch. They would come in and have somebody that would come in and read the news off the wire at night.
And you had WSM, and then you had Channel 5,
right.
and then Channel 2. That's the sequence that they became, that they started actually in Nashville.
Right. WSM was first, and actually Channel 2 was, 8 was in. WSIX
right.
was second
right.
on the air, and Channel 5 was right behind them, right.
And we think, you know, in certain respects, that's not that long ago. And then you start thinking about the progression of what happened since then. And you guys, believe it or not, were the best known people mm-hmm. in Tennessee. You really were, because television was so new, and of course radio was strong back then. You guys were in our living rooms and our dens every day, every night. It was amazing.
Truman.
And when we started talking, Hooper and I started talking about you, I said, oh my gosh. I said, he's part of the family.
let me interject something right here while I've been listening to you. You know, Hudley started, he broke ground there in, mm-hmm. in Nashville and Davidson County. And as you said a minute ago, TV was in its infancy back then. I can remember when we got our first TV, in the 50s, we sat there and watched the test pattern.
Oh, yeah.
And we thought that was amazing on how that could come, and nobody was talking. It would be the first thing you saw in the morning and the last thing you saw in the afternoon.
We went from Howdy Doody to Huddly
Howdy
Crockett.
Howdy Doody. And then, I think maybe I won't go that way. But anyway, the news people all around the world recognize Middle Tennessee as being one of the strongest news markets in the mm-hmm. world. And I think you would recognize that too, Huddly, because it everywhere you go, you see news accounts and news stories and news channels. But Nashville seems to have that best thing going as far as talent, as far as ability to put together a newscast. And Hudley was one of the first ones to start that back when he started with WSIX. And so this is really important to me, and I think to many of our listeners.
Well, we had, of course, and you had great competition too. You know, Judd Collins at Channel 4, and Channel 5 had several different ones, but Bill Jay was one of the ones that was so well known and such a great fellow. And I had close relationships with all these people. That was, the news business was, just as it is today, it was competitive, but it was highly competitive. But you knew each other, mm-hmm. and
it was sort of like the Nashville Banner and the Tennessean. They had a lot of competition going, but you knew each other across the room. You knew those folks who were doing
well. They were, and they were in the same building.
In the same building,
but there was a lot. It was a lot different than it is today, because the newspapers are no longer anything.
No,
they're just a shadow, thin shadow of what they were, and that's not going to change.
No.
But there was so much competition then. But the Banner and Tennessean couldn't even agree on the time of day. You remember when they had daylight savings time came in, and Mr. Stallman, the arch conservative publisher of the Banner, and from the shoulders, his column on the front page, you know, came out. No daylight savings time. He fought it. Well, they passed it in a national law. Of course, Tennessean was all for it, being the progressive newspaper and so forth and so on. So when the day comes, and whatever the day was, when you went down the street the next morning, you remember they had a big two-sided clock there. It said Tennessean on one side, Banner on the other mm-hmm. side. It was at 12th and Broad. Well, the people that were going out of town, it was 8 o'clock in the morning. The people are coming in the same place. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. That's a true story. They couldn't agree on the time of day. Yeah. But it was a great competition. And we miss it today because we have no competition. And I sometimes think the Tennessean doesn't even compete with itself. It is such a different newspaper, but they all are. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what one of the big, big problems that we have, and we have it in broadcasting also, is that so many of the newspapers are all owned by the same outfit, mm-hmm. and so many of the radio and television stations. And I think that's wrong, particularly in the radio, well, in anything, but radio and television, for this reason. The airwaves belong to the people, and we always had them regulated from the standpoint mm-hmm. of the Federal Communications Commission. Mm-hmm. And you can, back when I started, you couldn't own but 5 radio stations, mm-hmm. and they could not be anywhere in the close proximity. Mm-hmm. And then they went to, when television came in, you couldn't have, but I believe it was a max of 7 all over the country. Mm-hmm. And now you have everything is just in just a few hands.
Monopolized.
And it has, now we've seen a total change in the product.
Sure.
In television news, for an example, particularly the network news, has changed now to an adversarial role altogether. There's no question about fairness or trying to be impartial mm-hmm. or anything else. Mm-hmm. And you've got one network that is moderate to conservative, but thought to be identified as conservative, and all the rest, the major networks, are just, they are identified as being very, very, very liberal. Mm-hmm. And the problem is the language that they use and the structure they use to report the so-called news, they report rumors with the same validity as something that's hard, cold fact. So it leaves the people across the country somewhat confused, and I think it's going to continue to be that way for quite some time.
It's not improving anytime soon, I don't think, because it's all about the mighty dollar, as you know. The dollar drives many things, and advertising, like you said, is the key to staying on the air, and it's bad for us.
Well, Howard, the other thing too is that what you have going on now is the whole information world is just absolutely flooded with all of the electronics and internet and so forth, and you cannot tell facts from mm-hmm. fiction. Mm-hmm. You cannot tell rumors from something that's documented, and it's very difficult for people to know and understand what's going on.
When we get into
politics. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Hudley Crockett.
Yeah.
So, here you go.
Are we exchanging gifts this year?
I don't know. Guess I had a weak moment. Happy holidays.
Oh, well, thanks, bro, but I didn't get you anything.
Oh, that's okay. You're going to have to take that back anyway.
What do you mean? Like, to the store?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a return.
Huh, lottery ticket. Thanks.
Check it out.
Whoa, this is a winner. Dude, this is a big winner.
Hey, just taking care of my little brother.
This year, you too can be a winner. Give the gift of game-changing fun. Happy holidays from the Tennessee Lottery.
It's really not much. It's nothing,
oh,
really.
Oh, hush. I'm sure I'm going to love it.
No, really. It's just a little
it's
something.
It's a candle.
Yeah, it's pine forest, I think.
Wait, is this the candle you got last year?
I don't think it's the same one.
This is. It's the candle your brother
made
you.
It might be the same kind of candle.
Give the gift that won't be regifted. Instant games from the Tennessee Lottery. Play Season's Gold and Trim the Tree, just to name a few. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Could have gotten you a sweater.
Let Jeff Sowell's Family Restaurant prepare your deep-fried or smoked turkey for Christmas. 867-2164. Complete meals are prepared and ready for pickup when you need it. 867-2164.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Ted Werbin. A man's charged with vehicular homicide and driving under the influence after a Nashville cabbie is killed in a traffic crash in Murfreesboro. Police say the cabbie was stopped at a gas station on Saturday morning when another vehicle slammed into the driver's side door, completely crushing it. The State Agriculture Department's Forestry Divisions released predatory beetles at the Martha Sunquist State Forest in Cock County. The beetles feed on hemlock woolly adelgids, an invasive pest killing hemlock trees from Maine to Georgia. The Tennessee Valley Authority expected to have a special meeting this morning to discuss delegating authority to the utility's new chief executive until it fills several vacancies on the board. The board's made up of 9 members. 5 seats are pending congressional action, including one that's up for reappointment. Congress is set to adjourn this month.
Next, it's the Better Business Focus with Terry Page.
Have devastating floods or storms affected you and your family? HRA Home Improvement is just a phone call away. HRA Home Improvement can handle just about any of your building needs. HRA Home Improvement is a local company with a mission to do the job right the first time, every time. Call your local general contractor, HRA Home Improvement Company, at 615-410-7924. Again, that number is 615-410-7924.
Identity theft is when someone uses your name, social security number, credit card number, or other personal information to apply for a credit card or gain access to your money. Some believe it won't happen to them, but more are finding out it can. For tips on how to keep your identity safe, visit gobbb.org or call me at 867-0032. This is Terry Page with your local Better Business Bureau.
Visitors who want to see the original Emancipation Proclamation at the Tennessee State Museum in February are able to make reservations for a small fee beginning today. The famous document, part of the Discovering the Civil War exhibition from Washington, D.C.'s National Archives. The University of Tennessee's Institute of Agriculture is holding some boot camps. They're designed to help people who sell farm products at farmers markets around the state be more effective in doing so. There are going to be 6 of these day-long camps. They'll be held in February and March of next year. The events currently are scheduled for stops in Bolivar, Dresden, Cookeville, Spring Hill, Knoxville, and Kingsport. Well, do you have talent? Or perhaps more importantly, do you think you do?
America's Got Talent is holding auditions in Nashville this week. Producers from the NBC show will be at the Nashville Convention Center on Thursday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pre-registration is encouraged and can be done at agtauditions.com.
That's TRN's Dan Item, and I'm Ted Werbin. This is Tennessee Radio Network News.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes, and we're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. Everybody here knows what's going on.
That's Randy Bolin at Murfreesboro Outdoors.
We got clothing, camouflage from top to bottom. Shotguns, shells, boots, pretty much anything. We got it.
Remember Murfreesboro Outdoors for that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list.
We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Park.
Weather Eye.
Let's check on your forecast. We've dropped to 48 degrees with rain here in the area. How much more rain do we have on tap for today?
We're going to be seeing clouds and good chances for rain, including a few thunderstorms continuing across the listening area today. High temperatures will be in the upper 50s early on, then will fall through the afternoon hours with northwest winds at around 10 to 20 miles per hour. Slight chance for a few lingering showers early on tonight too, then will drop down to lows near 29 degrees as that front pushes southeast. And then on Tuesday, sunshine is back in our forecast, but with a cooler high of 45. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Sam Donaisky.
Again, 48 in rain right now. One of Santa's elves at the Stones River Mall is our good neighbor of the day. The person nominating him says that he took time out of his busy, naughty, nice schedule to help a homeless family with a special gift. And so we send him flowers from Ryan's Flowers and Gifts. Our winner of the birthday cake today, Donnie Thompson. Donnie receives the birthday cake from our friends at Junior's Foodland.
That update brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Introducing Progressive's exclusive Snapshot Discount, a program that tracks your good driving and rewards it with discounts. Find out more at progressive.com. Again, that's progressive.com.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
And welcome back with Hudley Crockett. And this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care. When you and your family members need assistance for a day, a week, or indefinitely, At Home Care is ready to sit down with you and help devise a practical plan to meet your family's needs. At Home Care is different than any others you see in the local marketplace because they're owned and operated by longtime Murfreesboro resident Melissa Warren. That means At Home Care is hands-on and involved in your family members' care and satisfaction all day, every day. At Home Care, they provide top-quality professional caregiving services throughout Rutherford County and Middle Tennessee. Whether you need a 24/7 companion, ongoing assistance with transportation to church or doctor's appointments, laundry, housekeeping, personal care, or more, At Home Care is here for you. At Home Care, telephone number 713-4639, athomecaretennessee.com. That's athomecaretennessee.com. 713-4639. At Home Care, your number one source for the best care in Middle Tennessee. You know, Hudley, we all grew up in a time that was simpler. It seemed like there was more stability almost everywhere in the world at that time. And when we would watch the news, it was just simply reporting the news as it was given to them, and that was it. And, you know, I still remember you and that particular era as a time that I did not question much because, you know, we felt like that everything was given to us in a news format, and then it was up to us to assimilate that to the way that we should. If you were back over one of the news places again, and I mentioned that
a lot of people are certainly glad that's not the
case. I'm not, I can tell you that. But how would you tackle that particular situation that we've got in this country right now?
Truman, the only thing I can really honestly refer in that situation is exactly what it was at that time. And you did not really have a choice because you had the fairness doctrine in mm-hmm. I'm talking about broadcasting now, not newspapers, but in broadcasting. And it was absolutely imperative that if you got something off balance one side, you had to offer equal time, for an example. Mm-hmm. Or if you got to the point that you were reporting, making up stories or something like that, or reporting false stories, you could lose your license. And the FCC and each broadcast station, including this one and all the others, and television stations, they had a license renewal that came up either every 1 year or 2 years, I believe. And they had to provide so much public service time, they had to make sure that they had a clean slate and they had not been challenged for doing improper broadcasting or anything that was out of line. And so the news was whatever it was, whether you were reading something off a wire service or whether you were writing a story, people were very careful about what they reported. Mm-hmm. And you still had even the old newspaper situation where when they went in and talked about writing a story, you had the five principles that who, where, what, why, and so forth and so on. And that was followed. Today, it's so mechanical and it's so adversarial. I mean, you know, you just tell you, it's unbelievable. For an example, even the wire service, Associated Press now, has started, they've abandoned their old style of reporting. It's called an adversarial. In other words, they have a point of view that's in, and when you read an AP story now, it reads like a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got a point of view to it and so forth. You had none of that back in those days on the wire service because you had competing newspapers, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
Afternoon and in most of the larger cities, including Nashville, Memphis, so forth, you had competing newspapers, and many times, as it was in Nashville, the AP wire office would sit right between. It was in the back, and it sat right between. Tennessee was on one side of the building, Banner's on the other, and right back in the between them. And if anybody on that wire service desk wrote something that seemed to be slanted or ill-reported, either John Siegenthaler or Eamon Evans from the Tennessean or whoever was running the show at that time, or Mr. Stallman on the Banner side, would be down their throats.
Hmm.
I mean, because the AP was considered to be, and all wire services, UPI was too, was considered to be a neutral, valuable, validated source of news without anybody's opinion or anybody's hatred or anybody's bias or anything else. You just don't have that anymore.
Do you think it's possible to ever bring it back? Because it's, I hate to use the word brainwash, but basically that's what it is. You have a number of so-called experts that are constantly paneling and giving their opinions as if it was 100% true what they were giving the American public. And you and I know that it's all based on trying to influence the people of the United States on how they're to think about certain things.
It will never go back. It will never go back to what it was, because you also, as we talked about right before the break, there is the contest for the human mind, the public mind, comes from so many directions now. Mm-hmm. All the electronics and we're just bombarded with information, and it's almost impossible now to separate that. And if you had one good solid source that somehow acquired that reputation, everybody and his brother would be trying to buy him and change him and so forth. The main thing is people have to use an open mind and just get off every once in a while and think for themselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the problems is that we get bombarded so much that we almost feel lonesome if we don't, not where there's a lot of noise and a lot of so-called information. But the only way to filter it through is every once in a while and as frequently as possible, get off by yourself and just let all this information sort of, and do a thinking process.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking's sort of old-fashioned now.
It really is.
You know, we got people that can't count to 10, they can't spell, they can't do anything, but they can do everything on a computer. Well, the computers are wonderful instruments, but I like plain old arithmetic. If that's what we've been applying to this mess we're in with our national debt and our national economy and so forth, if a long time ago, if we just sit down with a yellow pad and drawn a line down the middle on one side, put income and on the other outflow or expenses, and followed that, we'd have been a lot better off than all the computers and trying to make judgments for us. The computers are supposed to help people get information. Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to do the work of the brain. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people don't agree with that, but I don't care whether they do or not, because I'm not on the air anymore.
You've been through that.
I may not be on this one very long.
No, you're going to be out as long as you want to be on this one. You have been in politics, and that is one of the toughest businesses to get into, as you know.
And it is a business now. That's the problem with it. There's so much money that it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And you know, we've both seen it on both sides. And right now, there is, I think one of the things that bothers me so much is we don't look at the candidates as much anymore. It's a party thing or whatever the thing is. This is going, tea parties or whatever. And we get so misguided in what we're doing. Now, you have been part of politics for a long time. What is the biggest change that you've seen as far as reaching out to the people and selling platforms and people's the people's images are just, you know, all over the place right now? But you were with Ellington, Governor Ellington,
right,
and some of the other people. What kind of fella was Governor Ellington, and how was it that he was able to stay in office so long, as far as and the respect that he still has after all these years as governor of Tennessee?
Well, he just stayed in office 8 years. He served as governor. Yeah. But, of course, he was Governor Clemens. And became his press secretary, news secretary, special assistant. Traveled with him everywhere he went. Wrote almost all of his speeches and all of his news releases. And when I say that, I don't mean I was writing saying this is what you ought to say. Mm-hmm. We had this very close relationship, and he would tell me the things he wanted to say, and then I would put them in words, and then he'd go back, and that's the way we did it. First of all, he was not a showboat, as so many people in politics. I would have to argue with him, and I argue with him about a lot. A big brother, younger brother relationship, and we disagreed, and that was we had agreed to disagree, or I'd never been there, because I'm a hard-headed Crockett, and everybody knows that, and he knew it also. But we had a great relationship. But I would have to argue with him just to have a news conference, because a lot of governors have news conferences just to be seen and heard, mm-hmm, when they don't have any news. And he would absolutely refuse to have a news conference if you didn't have some news. And it was just, he called that showboating, and he was not a showboat. He was unlike Governor Clement. They were two different personalities. Not that Governor Clement was a showboat, but he was a showman, much more so than Governor Ellington.
More an orator.
But
yeah,
they both were very good governors.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor Ellington had the respect of all the people around him. He was chairman of the National Governors Conference, and all of the 50 governors, including Republicans and Democrats, made no difference. They sought advice from him, and they were close to him, and he was close to them, and that gave me the opportunity in that period of time to know all 50 governors, to know people on their staffs. It gave me an opportunity to know President Johnson and Mrs. Johnson, and Vice President Humphrey and Mrs. Humphrey, and to work with the Secret Service staffs of all four of those. Mm-hmm. That's four different Secret Service staffs. The First Lady and the President have separate Secret Service. Mm-hmm. They work together, but they have assignments together. And the same way with the President. And to do all of that, and it gave me a great opportunity. But to answer your question even more clearly, it gave me an opportunity to see how big a man, broad a man, highly respected a man Governor Ellington was. Mm-hmm. And it was a great pleasure working with him. And I'm still very, very close to Ann, his daughter, and her husband, Tim, and John, mm-hmm, his son, and remained close to them.
Hadley, on the way up here today, you almost started a story that you was going to tell about the governor, maybe, and some of the insights with your relationship with him, but I'm not sure exactly where you were going with that. But
I think you're talking about last night at the White House.
That's exactly right.
Well, the relationship between Governor Ellington and Lyndon Johnson was a jewel in politics, mm-hmm, because Governor Ellington disagreed with Johnson so many, many times, but they, mm-hmm, were very, very close and went back for a lot of years. And Ms. Ellington and Mrs. Johnson, Lady Bird, were very, very close. Mm-hmm. And when they came anywhere close to Tennessee, they wanted to come to Nashville. Mm-hmm. And that was true when he was president and before he was president. And they were just very, very close. And to get to the story that Brother Pena was talking about, and this is an example of how politics have changed, too. We have so much of what you were referring to, the hate factor, the people just disliking each other, saying anything, paying no attention to facts, rhyme, reason, and so forth. This was the night before Nixon was to be sworn in as president. He had beaten Hubert Humphrey, of course. Well, no matter who wins the election and who's going in, all the governors, all 50 of the governors, of course, go to Washington, and they have a box and they attend the ceremony and also all of the social functions, and that's just part of the responsibility. Mm-hmm. And we had done that, and we'd been there all day, and we went back to the hotel, and just Ms. Ellington and Governor Ellington both were tired. And I was tired, too, but the main thing was that we'd gotten all of our work done that day. And Ms. Ellington said, let's just eat in tonight. So we ordered up room service, and we just finished it. It was probably about 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And the phone rings, and I picked up the phone, and I need to talk to Buford. Well, I knew the voice. It was Lyndon Johnson, because I had talked to the president on the phone a lot of times in my duties, putting he and Governor Ellington on the phone together. And I'd been out to the ranch, and, I mean, he knew who I was, and I, of course, obviously knew who he was. And I said, yes, sir, Mr. President. So I went and got the governor in the next room, and he gets on the phone. And Lady Bird and President Johnson were calling Governor Ellington and Catherine Ellington to come over to the White House and spend some of their last hours. This is the last night they were spending there. And they were getting ready for their staff to have its farewell party. And, of course, Governor and Ms. Ellington knew the staff, and, of course, I knew the staff by that time. But they were inviting them to come over because they just wanted to visit before the party started. They just wanted to visit with two old friends. And Governor Ellington, bless his heart, said to the president, you mind if I'd like to bring Hudley along? He said, of course, you know Hudley and so forth. And, of course, I'd done all this stuff together. And he said, yes, that'll be fine. That's how I got invited to this historical moment. They sent a car over from the White House, and we went along with our security man. We got to the White House. He stayed downstairs with the Secret Service that was on duty. And we knew all the Secret Service anyway. And then we got in a small elevator that goes up to the second floor, which is living quarters. Mm-hmm. And you get out, and there's a long reception hall there. And then if you go to the right, you go down, you enter the through a door, and you enter the presidential living quarters where they actually live. And so the president and Ms. Johnson were at the front, at the entrance to that, and we went into the parlor, as they call it. It was like a big living room. Mm-hmm. And the president and the governor and myself sat over in one corner with easy chairs and had a drink together. And Ms. Ellington and Ms. Johnson were in the other part of the room sitting on the sofa. And while we were there, the grandchild came in two or three times, and the dog came in two or three times. And here they were, old friends, just having a great time. And this went on for about 2 hours.
Wow.
And I did all, mine was listening. When I was asked, I participated, and I did participate in the conversation with the president a little bit. But I was there. I was witnessing that, and it was just a great time. And we got ready to start their party, and they wanted us to stay. I wanted the governor, Ms. Johnson, to stay, and he couldn't. I didn't want to because they had already been there. And anyway, so as we start out, the governor... Oh, I was going to tell you one thing that's very important. During this conversation, Johnson did not like Richard Nixon. He just didn't like him.
And that's hard to believe.
And during this conversation, at one point he said, you know, everybody knows, and you know I don't like Nixon. But with all the turmoil that's going on, I hope the people will give him a chance.
Yeah.
And that's what is missing in politics now. It is that type of feeling about what's best for the country, no matter what. Not what's best for the party, not what's best for some one individual, but what's best for the country. So as we left there, the president and Johnson gave each other a hug, you know, what we call the political shoulder hug. And
no daggers.
And Johnson said, well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow. And Governor Ellen said, well, I am too, because then I can start calling you the type of so-and-so that I used to call you before I had to call you Mr. President.
Well, Hudley, we've got a caller on the line. We have to use our earphone so we can hear. Caller, welcome aboard with Hudley Crockett.
Yes, first, Hudley.
Yes.
If my memory is correct, Woodrow Phillips was prominent in your campaign year, who was a friend of mine, and I voted for you for governor.
Well, thank you. Woodrow Phillips was one of the dearest people and did as much for the Middle Tennessee State University as any human being. He was just, he was most unselfish when it came to MTSU, and I thought the world of him.
Well, he was a good friend of mine. And the other thing, I wanted to refresh my memory, and correct me if I'm wrong. If I recall correctly, I was living in Shelbyville at the time, and you broadcast the first Tangerine Bowl that Middle Tennessee played in.
That's
down in Orlando, and you didn't have a color guy. And I felt for you because you had to talk during the halftime the whole game. Now, is that accurate?
That is exactly accurate. And I was doing, when it, as soon as I came back to Nashville, I started putting together the football and basketball network for MTSU. And, of course, the cornerstone station was right here, WGNS and Cecil Elrod, with WSIX and where I was in Nashville, and put the network together. And Cecil Elrod played a great role in landing MTSU that invitation to play the Citadel in the Tangerine Bowl, and I won't go into all those details, but I can tell you he played a very key role. He was quite a fella, and we went down and broadcast that ball game, and I had put 4.5 states together, radio stations, so we could do it on a network for them for the first time.
Well,
and you're right, I didn't have a color man. I don't think Cecil and I could afford a color man to go down and spend a week down there, so had to do a lot of ad-libbing.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I felt for you because you just had to talk constantly for all that time during the halftime commercials and everything, as I recall. And I've told people that, and they said, well, you're just wrong. But I wanted to be sure, and I'm happy that you were on Truman's show, because he does a good job, and it's good to talk, Wayne. Thanks a lot. Here.
Well, thank you. Crockett's have a way of talking longer than they should anyway.
Well, that's good. Okay.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Hudley Crockett.
Southern Community Bank, unlike all the rest. Beverly Barker, branch manager.
Southern Community Bank is a strong, independent community partner with a simple philosophy. Keep banking hassle-free for people who just want to be treated well.
We're unlike all the rest. Our services are intuitive. Our team is friendly. Our approach is refreshing, and our service is clearly unique.
We're located at 1950 Old Fort Parkway, next to the DoubleTree Hotel.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
It's time. Blue Raiders.
I am True Blue. Show your True Blue pride and celebrate the top overall sports program in the Sun Belt Conference 4 years in a row. Buy your season tickets now. Experience all the home games in Floyd Stadium for just $70. That's only $14 per action-packed gridiron showdown.
Show your True Blue this fall with Blue Raiders season tickets. Visit GoBlueRaiders.com or call 1-888-YES-MTSU. Go Blue Raiders.
Talking with Dr. Rishi Saxena, board-certified cardiologist, the first to acquire the 64-slice CT scan, and still the only one in the area that can decipher the information.
I'm the most trained guy. I'm board-certified in heart CT. Nobody else is in this area.
Before heart catheterization or stress test, call 896-4800. This CT scan only takes minutes, no needles, and it could show early signs other tests miss.
We are the only one who are trained to find plaque buildup earlier.
Don't know what to get that hunter or fisherman on your Christmas list? You need to stop by Murfreesboro Outdoors on Northwest Broad.
Everybody we've got here hunts and fishes. We're not just a store that don't know what we're doing. We're located at 2204 Northwest Broad Street, right in front of International Paper.
He knows Rutherford County, and he knows the people of Rutherford County. Truman Jones, here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Hudley Crockett, and this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes has a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turn off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on to Ridgely Road. You have seen so many neat things over the years. I mean, a lot of your memories are my memories to a point. But when you ran for, you ran for senator, and
right,
you ran for governor.
Right.
What are some of the fondest memories that you have? And I know it's hard to find fond memories sometimes in political races.
Particularly when you lose both of them.
Yeah. But they were tough races, and most of your strongholds would be in the Middle Tennessee area, because that's where most of the people knew you at that time, although you did have connections in West Tennessee and East Tennessee. And I know it's a tough business. I don't think it's as tough back then as it is now, because they've got a knife at your throat all the time right now. But what do you remember fondly about crossing the state and running for those two particular
offices? Oh, well, I really enjoyed campaigning. I mean, what I did not enjoy and would not do was ask people for money. And that's kind of, say, well, how are you going to run? That was not wise. I'll be very honest about it. But I had no problem and enjoyed asking people for their votes, and was naive enough to think that the money would come in. When we ran for the United States Senate, our total expenditures, and we came within 29,000 votes of going to the Senate.
Right.
Our total expenditure was $65,000. And you tell somebody that now, and they think you just made it up. That's what happened. And when I ran for governor 4 years later, we spent $225,000.
Mm-hmm. But
nobody was spending as much as they are.
Well, you didn't have the PACs back then like you do today, where they donate so much money to all these candidates.
And it's all on television now, isn't it? Just about everything is.
Yes, a lot of the personal campaigning is almost not. I'd just say a lot of it. Much of the personal campaigning is done to get some news coverage on the 6 o'clock, 10 o'clock news, and mm-hmm. so forth. It's not really. It's not really the old time campaigning like we used to see, but it's the whole atmosphere has changed, and also you have the two national parties have both made some, I think, tremendous mistakes, and and I think they hurt their own candidates more than they help many times, particularly at the local level. Well, you know, get out of the brass tacks. A lot of people, you may get some phone calls when I say this, but look at Tennessee, the Democratic Party in Tennessee, if there is a Democratic Party in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. But look what's happened. This used to be a Democratic state.
Strong.
And then are not in tune a lot of times with their own candidates.
Mm-hmm. You can go back to the old film. What is it, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Yeah.
Mr. Smith's not around anymore, is he?
No, it's hard to find.
You can't find many Smiths that want to go to Washington anymore.
No, you can't find any Joneses.
Well, you see what's going on right now as we sit here. I mean, we're all waiting to see if we're going to, the country's going to go over the fiscal cliff. Mm-hmm. And the only way to solve that is through just good, sound, solid political negotiations.
Right.
And that when all is said and done, there are only two men that mm-hmm. can make this happen or not happen. The President of the United States and the Speaker of the House. It's those two mm-hmm. people. And now they finally, at least yesterday, for the first time, really sit down mm-hmm. and didn't come running out and go back to talking and telling each side. They should have done that a long time ago. But that's the way it happens.
My prediction, this is just for what it's worth, is both sides will come out at winners. And that we won't go over that cliff. I don't believe the people, I don't believe they'll let us do that. And I don't think.
Well, what Hudley's saying is basically.
Sure.
Is whether you're Republican or a Democrat, if you jump ship.
That's right.
You're losing a lot of your security
that's right.
A lot of your support. And the needs of the American people should always come first. It can never come second.
I think there's enough common sense out there where the people, where our leaders will realize that at the last minute. They're holding out to the last minute, and I understand.
I think there's a very good chance that will happen, and it will be for an old-time political reason, in that a lot of people assume and are espousing, including some of the president's closest people, that the president doesn't get hurt if they go over the cliff, that it'll all fall on the backs of the Republican Congress. Well, remember that the Congress itself is at an all-time low ebb, and the Republican Congress is not held any lower esteem than the Democrat. It's the whole Congress. Mm-hmm. But the main thing is that it will, the President of the United States will get hurt if we go over the cliff, and the Republicans are going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, for an example, here's something they could do, okay? This is just me. It may sound silly, but I think they could do, and they may do. On the tax issue, everybody knows that the very wealthiest people are going to pay more, whether it's in a reduction or whether it's in the rate.
Mm-hmm.
With that, the concession that has to come with that is that, I lost my line of thought from it, is that it be tied in with something that will take care of, in other words, by going, and one of the things you could do is you could change the tax code to change the way small businesses taxed, those small businesses that end up being taxed as individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That you get that thorn out of the way, and then the president has to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to start making some realistic cuts mm-hmm. on entitlements.
Sure.
I think that's still a pretty good chance that's going to happen, that's because right. I agree with you. I don't think down deep either side mm-mm. wants to go over the cliff
mm-mm.
because it's going to be chaos.
It will.
Do.
It will.
Okay. Hud, it's been a great show.
Well, thank you.
Can I expect you to come on again?
Well, we haven't discussed talent fees.
Well, I brought a lot of money with me. I can pay for your gas back and forth.
People at home don't know what we're laughing about. I think we yeah. talked about that before we came on the air. But
well, Truman, I appreciate you letting me come in and sort of eavesdrop.
Oh, I enjoyed it. It's so much fun. This is one show that I could stay on all day and not even get any sleep tonight and keep on going. I think we could kind of do a filibuster, I guess.
And we barely touched the surface of his background.
We're going to have to go, though, unfortunately, and we'll be back in the morning at 9:00. See you then.